This is Mile High.
Do I want to tell the story or do I want to show the message?
You've got a lot of work to do between Mile High.
The time has come where we can know.
We have a responsibility, an ethical and moral responsibility.
We have to do it better in order to move people along.
Up, down, inside out.
If you get your mind right,
it is not. It is a receipt for a point.
Because love is my first technique.
It's now time for the show.
Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles, coming from an altitude of 5,280 feet, Mile High territory, during the COVID pandemic. And I am here doing our podcast with my friend, Drew Clark, who will be on stage at Mile High 2020. This event is going to be going down, and you should be rising up. And I am psyched to have Drew rise up. He is a stellar shining star in the chiropractic profession, running the Arc of Life Chiropractic Family Spinal Care Center in Bonita Springs, Florida, focused on the chiropractic principles, an upper cervical focused practitioner. He served on the ICA Upper Cervical Council, and runs iScout, which is a phenomenal organization, company that you should learn more about for your business so you can dial in the details, because if you don't track it, you don't care about it. And he will be lighting up the stage at Mile High, and right now he's going to be lighting up this podcast. Dr. Drew, I am so psyched to have you aboard, and I'm so psyched to have the American flag behind you.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm so happy to be here. And yeah, I was American before I was a chiropractor, and both of them are equally important to me. So it's awesome.
There you go. And I also like that when you lean back, you can see the shirt that you've got going on there. Yeah.
There we go. I got to represent that, right?
Right. Exactly. So Dr. Drew, we're living a very interesting time right now. And I'm grateful to hook up with you on this podcast from a life experience. First of all, let's the people get to know you a little bit better. How did you find your way into the chiropractic world?
You know, to be quite frank, I felt like I was led into the chiropractic space. You know, fundamentally in undergrad, I didn't really have much exposure prior to chiropractic. I played football in undergrad, so all I knew was come in and get racked and cracked. I didn't know why or anything of that nature until later. And there was a girl that I was dating at the time. My wife knows this whole story, so it's okay. And her mom was a nurse, and she worked in an office in Philadelphia with a doctor who was seeing AIDS patients. And the doctor's son had just graduated from Life University in Georgia. So she knew I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do exactly. And she connected us. And he handed me a green book when I got there, and talked philosophy, and it felt like the missing puzzle piece. 6 months later, I had applied to chiropractic school, and I was on campus at Life University, and the rest is history.
Outstanding. And you graduated when? How long have you been in Florida practicing?
I graduated 2009. So, I mean, I've been practicing in Florida for now since 2012, so about 8 years. And prior to that, I spent time in Italy for about 2 years. And Charlotte, North Carolina.
Cool. Well, outstanding, outstanding. And thank you for your service through the FCS and the ICA Upper Cervical Council. And so with that, with the current global experience that we are having and circumstance, how do you see this through a chiropractic lens?
Well, you know, fundamentally, I think we all know chiropractic's role in supporting the body and supporting the immune system. And, you know, there was a lot of different things that happened in the chiropractic space. And, you know, from my perspective, I really want people to take account of the things that have happened, the people who remain silent, the people who have spoken up, because we had a different response across multiple states. We had some states shutting down. We had some states opening up. We had some people that knew chiropractic was essential. We had some people questioning whether chiropractic was essential. And from my perspective, chiropractic was essential from day one. There was never a question about it. And the role that chiropractic plays I want to see grow on a bigger scale, and I want to see the data to support what we do. I want to see the fire behind the people who are driving this profession forward. I want to see them stand in those moments. But my belief and my understanding is chiropractic is absolutely essential for this. Chiropractic is absolutely essential for every person on this planet. And fundamentally, I won't rest until that is realized.
Outstanding. And we are, you know, in the same vein of thought there. And that's why we put all the energy that we do to chiropractors gathering together at Mile High and bringing the information through this podcast. Now with that, your focus has been the upper cervical area, right? That's what your research, your information. Why did you find your, what led you to feel like the upper cervical area was focus? Because you're very research and data driven. Something had to bring that to you, not just a whim.
Right. Well, fundamentally, I talk about it like this, and I say this with a grain of salt because I believe all chiropractic is important, and I believe chiropractic works fundamentally, right? Mm-hmm. But when I talked to multiple people, just in general, no one argues with the impact of an atlas adjustment. It's not questioned. It's known. It's understood. And then when I talk about the human body, you know, we think about things structurally all the time, and that's great. And we know when we build a house, you build a house from the bottom up. The foundation has to be strong in order for that house to stand for any period of time. I understand that too. But when you mix in neurology and you mix in structure, the most important part of the body is not my feet, it's my head. Right? So fundamentally, it made sense to me that a lot of the protective mechanisms that exist to protect this area first, and they'll compensate with regard to things down below. So we take a whole body approach to the body. My perspective is we just need to make sure that this area is clear first before we look elsewhere and ensure that other things and other compensatory things are addressed. So when you talk about blood flow to and from the brain, you talk about the fluid dynamics, CSF fluid to and from the brain. When you talk about, you know, dural attachments, there's a lot of things that happen up here in this tiny little area, and everything that comes from the body has to go back up to this through this tiny little corridor to be processed by the brain and vice versa. So if this corridor is messed up, then it can impact everything globally. And this is why we choose to focus here first and then expand our thought out from a chiropractic perspective.
Excellent. And as I said, I know you do a lot in terms of the research world and science and all of that. So there's evidence to support that. Now, we're talking about the current situation, circumstance. I don't like it calling it a pandemic. I just think it's a circumstance that we're living through.
Three more.
I don't want to give it more power than that. However, so there's a chiropractic lens. What the chiropractors chiropractic play with that? And then there's also the American freedom lens. So if we look at what's going on, governors, states, politicians, how do you see that through the lens of being an American?
Well, fundamentally, I did a video actually the other day, and it was all based upon looking at things through a constitutional perspective. I went through kind of the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. I went through the point of the Bill of Rights, and then we went through the First Amendment. And the First Amendment, you know, all these amendments are guarantees of personal freedoms underneath. And what I've seen is people infringe upon personal liberties in the name of fear. I choose not to live my life in fear. And fundamentally, the Constitution, along with those guarantees of personal freedom, give me the right to choose. We can all disagree, but we all are Americans. We all fall under these personal guarantees of personal freedom, which means we all have the right to choose. So from a health perspective, you know, quarantining the healthy was never a thing. That blows my mind fundamentally anyway. Closing down businesses, telling people that they can't go outside and things of that nature are direct violations of our guaranteed constitutional rights, and I am 100% unequivocally against it. And I just wanted to remind people that their power exists in the collective. We the people, the government derives their powers from the consent of the governed. And the governed are us as Americans, and that includes chiropractors, right? So if I want to go outside, I should have the right to choose. If you want to stay inside, guess what? You also have the right to choose, and you can do so for as long as you so choose. But that Constitution guarantees us the right to choose and not have a government infringe on those rights, because that becomes tyranny.
Yes, yes. There's a difference between having unhealthy or at-risk people stay at home versus healthy people.
Right. Now, we talk about herd immunity. I mean, we could get into a lot of different concepts on that front, but, you know, fundamentally, if we rest on the Constitution, in my opinion, it's unconstitutional to do so.
Yes. Yes. And then it's very interesting as things come to light where we see shifts of people saying certain things are fake news simply because they go through the against the narrative
of
the media.
Right. I've seen that so many times, and it baffles me. And I don't know how we arrived at the point where just because my point differs from your point, it's fake news. Or if I disagree with your main narrative, then it's fake news. According to who? And I was talking to an MD who happens to be in our practice. I was talking to a nurse practitioner who happened to be in our practice, and they were referring to conversations that they were having amongst their colleagues. And the concept was, is they were upset because there's apparently one voice that is speaking for the whole collective, and they disagree. Now, they disagree with the main narrative and the direction of it, but it's being presented as if this is the only way to proceed, and this is the actual way, and there's one person or two people or one committee that has been put above all the rest, and we have to listen to them. And they're like, that's not true. That's also not how science works. Science works based upon collective debate centered around data, not one voice, one person's interpretation. So we've taken one interpretation, and now any other interpretation has become dissent, and dissent is no longer tolerated, so it needs to be censored. It is labeled fake news, right? And I don't agree with that. That's just not how things work. I used a three-legged stool example. Most of us in chiropractic are really familiar with that three-legged stool example. But there are three legs underneath that stool, even with regard to healthcare. And you can't sit on a three-legged stool with two legs. You also can't sit on a three-legged stool with one leg. And all those different legs, let's talk about the government. You have the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches. They all seek to balance one another, and the checks and balances for the other. You can go down to, you know, the House, the Senate. You know, you can go down to local police. You can go down to the local police department, the sheriff's department, the state department. They all serve very different roles, and most people don't understand that. They serve very different roles, and I'm going to do a video later on that. But it's checks and balance. In healthcare, we also have checks and balance. Right? I work with, co-manage some particular patients with MDs. So there was three concerns, epidemiology, allopathy, and then vitalism. If let's just say those are the three legs underneath this three-legged stool. I think the biggest problem with this whole COVID response is that we ignored certain legs of the stool, and we had a one-sided approach. So epidemiology said, which is the study of disease and how to contain it, said, okay, we need to self-quarantine, we need to wash our hands, we need to do all these different things. Okay, from a data perspective, we didn't have data, we didn't know, so people were taking precautions. I have no problem with precautions, but that's one side. The other side is allopathy. It was, okay, we don't have a drug for it, we don't have a vaccine for it, we're going to go make those things. In the meantime, if it gets bad enough, come to us and we're going to add supportive care. But what are they supporting? They're supporting that innate wisdom that rests in all of us, right? That we just seem to ignore or forget about as a society. There's an intelligence that animates this body that's always seeking and working towards keeping us alive and healthy. So they're going to be supporting that. And then that brings in the vitalistic concept. So allopathy is really the study of disease and how to treat it with drugs and surgery. As BJ said, the cause of what man makes people sick, you know, but vitalism is health and what causes man to live and be vibrant and be healthy. And chiropractic falls underneath that banner, all of which are necessary to talk about a health perspective. But if you leave out one leg, it destroys the whole three-legged stool, and you get a one-sided approach, and that's what we've had with COVID-19.
Yes, and it's very interesting that you said about science works that way. As far as I know, politics works that way as well. Right? That we're supposed to have multiple perspectives that come together, right, and discuss and come up with solutions, not seeing one particular bent. And same thing with philosophy, and same thing with most things in what we call a democracy.
Absolutely. I say all the time that when something is a truth, you don't have to alter that truth in accordance to the circumstance. If it's a truth, it transcends all. So if we talk about this checks and balance system, we talk about this, how it works, it's going to apply to science, it's going to apply to philosophy, it's going to apply to religion, it's going to apply to all of these things because it's a truth. And if we're ever faced with something that we have to change and manipulate in accordance to where we are or the situation, the people we're around, then I'll make an argument that it's not true.
Yeah, and I think that actually happens to be called a dictatorship, possibly.
There you go. I think I made a comment the other day that if I wanted to be in a communistic state or country, then I'd move to China.
Right.
But you can see what flag I have behind me, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
Exactly. Now, so with that being said, that's also where chiropractic laws, principles, values really value that people are powerful, that their bodies are powerful, that their bodies are intelligent. They have an incredible capacity to heal versus they're powerless. They have no capacity to heal. They got to depend on an outside force to fix their powerless body, right? Mm-hmm. Versus that they have an incredible thriving to thrive and to be at their best, and that you want to work with and enhance that. That really is in alignment with those principles, which is why I think a lot of chiropractors are right now passionate about what they see going on in the world.
Right. And I'm looking for those chiropractors to stand up and stand tall. You know, we were looking and we had a conversation amongst, I guess you would say, some of the younger chiropractors in the profession. It was like, you know, where are our warriors, or who is stepping into those roles, and who's going to be fighting for the principle? And I had to think, right? And this is why I'm so big on data, and I'll go there in a minute, but I had to think, you know, I went to Life University, and under Life University is a bell tower. And in the bell tower, there's a list of all the names of the chiropractors who went to jail for right. chiropractic, right? Because they believed in this principle, they believed in this vitalistic concept. And day after day, I watched chiropractors questioning their efficacy, questioning their authority, questioning, in essence, it looked like chiropractic, and it was baffling to me. And I started thinking about these people who went to jail for chiropractic, and I was trying to compare it to this situation now. And I was like, well, what if those chiropractors back then bowed because some seemingly overwhelming force said that they couldn't practice, or that they weren't important, you know? And I had to ask myself some questions. And, you know, I even asked myself a question of, well, am I willing to go to jail? Like, how do you not ask that question when faced with this type of circumstance for it? And I didn't like that train of thought. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, I'm so big on data, because I don't want to ever get to the point where I have to make that decision. Right. So for me, it's a how do I become proactive in a sense that I can do my best to ensure that I never am forced to answer that question? Because, you know, I have three little girls. Right. I love chiropractic, but do I want to leave my three little girls? I prefer not to. Definitely not my queen, my wife. So what can I do? And that's where the data piece comes in. That's where the research piece comes in, because, you know, I have a strong philosophy and what I believe chiropractic to be. But the data really just needs to support that. And it does. We just need to organize it and present it in a collective fashion. That way, there is no question about chiropractic's role in health in this human population. And if we want to add in a name like COVID-19, that won't be a question either, right? So those are the things that we can do ahead of time to ensure that we don't have to make that decision, but we have to act. Because if we don't act, then we end up having to make decisions that we never wanted to make in the first place.
You know, I think about that often, the people that were jailed for chiropractic, and I think, like, they went to jail for it. Do you think they did that because they didn't have another way to make a buck? Like, money some other way, and this was the only way they knew to make money? Do you think it was like they thought that they had the only solution for neck pain in the that's in the history of man, and that's they went to jail to fight for that? Or do you think they went to jail for something bigger? You know, they could have made money some other way, and there probably are other solutions for pain. Or was that the only reason they went to jail? There's a bigger principle that they were seeing under their hands happen for, you know, for sure. And we wonder how much do people really in today's chiropractors and chiropractic students really have had real, true chiropractic experiences of the impact that chiropractic can have on a human life.
Right. I mean, I can't tell you how many people, how many of our patients came in and they thanked us for being open and made statements that I don't know what I would do if you all weren't open in this particular moment. And, you know, those types of statements were very humbling, you know, because you can get in these situations where you're just thinking about yourself, thinking about your family, even expanding, you're thinking about your staff or your team. And then it's just like, well, these people are depending on you. They came here in the first place because they viewed you as someone that's in a it puts you in a leadership role with regard to their health. And they're looking for you to lead, not to follow, but to lead. And they pay you to do so and pay you well to do so. So you have a responsibility to them just as much. And then I got into some of the research and then I did a video on, it was just a simple research article that presented a concept. And the concept was, that NSAIDs decrease antibody production. I had the potential to decrease antibody production. And I was like, well, we've told everybody to stay at home, self-isolate, you know, giving them no instruction on what to eat, no instruction on what to do, and just told them to clean everything, right? Well, if they're in pain, we've taught them over decades and centuries at this particular point that what they need is a pill in order to address that. Well, now we're telling them that the pill that we've taught them that they needed to use to deal with their pain is the very thing that will decrease their body's ability to produce antibodies. Right. And we talk about an immune response. Antibody production is at the crux of how your body deals with an infection. But now they're sitting at home and shooting themselves in the foot because they don't know any better. And if we don't tell them, who is?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. We had that same experience. Like, we had to close in Colorado, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was very challenging because our practices when we were reopened were like, I can't believe they made you close. This is when we needed you the most, you know, right? And so that level of gratitude was so high. Numbers may have been different, but gratitude was off the charts. If there was a number for that, it was like the highest in my 20 years of practice. So now speaking of numbers, I know that you're very much a research, data-driven person, and you've seen that being successful in practice, it having a dashboard as to where your practice is going is important. And you've built something which is phenomenal for people to be able to measure so they can really have planned success, like strategize success because they know where they are. Can you mention a little bit about that and why that's important?
Oh yeah, I mean to be honest, the message rings truer now than it did before, and it was a true message before. And it's just, you know, I looked at when we opened practice, I looked at big business, and you know, they are getting very happy about KPIs, metrics, key performance indicators, things of that nature, and they use those to drive the decisions of what they make. So when you see a Walmart on the corner or a CVS on the corner, they didn't just randomly choose that spot because they said, oh, you know what, that looks like a great location for us to move. They've looked at thousands of data points at that particular point to determine the likelihood that there's going to be success there. So it's like if big business uses these metrics to not to make their decisions, but gives them information that helps them make informed decisions that are likely to be better, then how do we allow small business, i.e. the chiropractor, to do the same thing? Now, we all went through chiropractic school. We know that we didn't get a DC MBA, right? If we're honest, we know that, right? But there are key performance indicators and metrics that are essential to understanding in practice to help you build a successful practice, but also help you scale it. And I want to see chiropractic office scale. I want to see it's bigger. I want to see us doing things on a bigger stage. And that's where the crux of this goes. Now, when you talk about this plandemic, as we talked about it, or we talk about this situation and not a pandemic at all, we talk about now the importance of data points and not letting people fall through the cracks. Now your data becomes more important than it was before, because this is how you identify those different areas and figure out how to come out of this and come out of it bigger and better. And to boot, I do want to say that the crux of this, or the foundation of this, is business intelligence. It is data. It is presenting that to you in a way that makes it actionable. But underneath, guess what? Once we have centralized way to collect data, we're not just talking about stats and percentages and conversions. We're also talking about now clinical data points. So now we talk about a centralized way to collect clinical data points. And now what can we collectively do if we have a centralized way to collect data points? Clinical. Now we get into research, right? And you look at these different offices, and most of us have a bunch of data that's segmented or fragmented in different places, whether it's in a box in the closet, it's in a file cabinet over here, it's in an EHR system that doesn't connect with anything else, it's in a thermography system, another SEM. So there's all these different places that have data, but they're not centralized and collected and connected back to the clinical outcomes. So now we talk about that is setting the framework in order to do that, right? So that's what we've used at first, our office, as a basically a test pilot case to see how can we put as much objective information into our office that's not affecting the principal and what we're communicating and not affecting the flow. And then how can we aggregate it in a way that gives us the ability to churn out massive amounts of research that's then going to be beneficial for the profession and beneficial for situations like this, because we have the data that shows what we all know to be true and have seen over hundreds of years.
Yes. And that's vital, because you're right. We say this in so many ways, in research and also in terms of our impact, there's no shortage of spines distorted as far as I can see. And so there's no shortage of people that need chiropractic care. However, there is a shortage of chiropractors being impactful and successful and reaching more than they can. And so to do that, having great metrics helps you be able to navigate. It's very hard to go through a storm blind. Like, you know, to fly a plane through a storm blind, that's right. Not something that you want to do. And a lot of chiropractors really do that, as right. compared to having a dashboard to say, oh, this is where I have to shift things or where I can be more effective so I can have more people on more tables more often. So tell this just real briefly how iScout does that.
Well, ultimately, it takes the information. We like people to centralize their focus on one area. So instead of recording things in 13 different areas, we want to record it in one place. And then we take that information, we run it through thousands and thousands of lines of code, and we present that back to you in visualizations and in a way that makes it actionable. So you're not just looking at a sheet and looking at numbers and looking at an Excel spreadsheet, but you're actually looking at something and being able to see not only what the problem is, but generates the list and the instruction and the information to tell you how to then make a change. And then you can track that change to determine whether or not it's actually beneficial or not. So when you make a decision, the other thing, just like in the office, right, when you deliver an adjustment, we want to know that we know that we know that we enacted or we created the outcome that we wanted to with regard to the removal of that subluxation. We want to confirm that. The same thing in practice is true. When you make a change due to a practice subluxation, you also have to be able to track now to see if the outcome is in fact what you want it to be. And if it's not, shift courses again. So we provide that, and we provide some other operational, organizational tools that help you practice and be more efficient.
Yes. And hey, at this point, it's no secret in the 2020 that people are having economic impact of what our governments, local and national and global, have done. And that economic impact is going to require something of all small businesses, including chiropractors, which is to be strategic, to run efficiently, to be smart, to run lean, not because of your pocketbook, though that's important because you're a business, but right. because of the lives that you're gonna you need to be able to impact and serve through this current circumstance that need you more than ever to be smarter so that you can stay in operation and stay in operation not in a survival mode but a thrival mode.
Right, absolutely. And that's a big heart. There's two things I really want to say to the comment that you just made. Number one is I've seen, heard, and know offices, chiropractic offices, who are questioning whether or not they can reopen. I mean, because the economic impact has been so big and so bad. And my heart goes out to them, but at the same time, I want to see this chiropractic community band together and see how we can help. All right. So, and I want to encourage people that if you are in the chiropractic space and this has been extremely detrimental to you, that you reach out, whether it be privately or publicly, however it's most comfortable, and allow some of us to help in whatever way we potentially can, because ultimately we want to see chiropractic live and we know the community and the world needs it. But I want to know, and I want to know because I want to know if there's a way that we can help. And there's people in this profession that are willing to, but just reach out. I want to encourage people to reach out. And you can reach out to me if you want privately. You can reach out to Danny privately. And I know that we'll find a way to help in whatever way we can.
Yep. And another reason why we're excited to have you at Mile High, because we know Mile High, we focus on three things that we feel are vital for chiropractors to have an impact, okay? Because this is all not about us, but about the communities that we serve and the humanity that needs something vital for their health, which is one, our philosophy, right? We have to uplift and deepen our understanding of our philosophy because we know there's a lack of that in our education as a profession. Two, we have to expand our vision. If there's any time that our vision needs to be expanded more than ever, it's right now, so that we can see our way through this. And then number three is our business strategies, because if we're going to impact the world, we have to be wise with our business strategies. So I'm very happy that the focus that you have, because it will help chiropractors and more importantly, help the people that we serve. Now, last thing to really mention here through this podcast, vitalism. So that focus, often people think vitalism, those chiropractors are the crazy ones. They have no science. They don't have research. They don't have data. It's a hoax. Why don't you just do evidence-based care, that there's no evidence for these vitalistic chiropractors? You know, being someone who has more of that analytical mind, rebuttal that?
I mean, fundamentally, when you think about things, I mean, we can approach it from a few different ways. So let's talk about, I'll use one example. Let's talk about upper cervical misalignment, atlas misalignment. What we know is that if you look at the atlas itself that sits right underneath the cranium of the skull, anterior to that, we have something, the internal jugular vein runs right up anterior to the atlas. I myself have people that when the atlas is misaligned, it compresses the internal jugular vein. So that's altering fluid dynamics and altering the brain's ability to drain itself. Now, if you have altered fluid dynamics and blood is and toxins and waste are not able to drain from the brain itself, that's going to trigger all kinds of responses. Now, what type of life does that person live with regard to that? Now, I don't have to treat the MS that may result. I don't have to treat the CTE or the long-lasting concussion effects that have to result from that. But that person is going to express life at a lower capacity because their body is not working the way that it should. And there's a multitude of different ways that we can identify at this particular point scientifically what a subluxation causes or what a misalignment causes when it's there. And it doesn't have to be associated with a quote-unquote condition or symptom. These things happen, right? So if we look at the human body itself, would the human body be able to express itself better if it was able to perform the functions as God intended it to, as this intelligence inside wants, right? Or not? And the answer is yes. And we can wrap as much science around that as we want. If we talk about the fact that most of the nutrition for the brain is movement, right? And when you have things that are not moving, and that alters nerve system function, it alters the nerve's capacity to express itself. How well is that person going to live life or express life? We can go as deep down into science as we want with regard to how this applies to the vitalistic principle and vitalistic concept. But I tell people all the time, until you held a baby in your hands that's failing to thrive, and you adjust that baby and see life return, you won't fully understand this vitalistic principle. In that moment, I don't need to talk about whether or not this baby has a named condition. It's enough for me to know that the baby's subluxated. And if the baby's subluxated and I remove the subluxation and I release the imprisoned impulse, if you will, then life returns to that baby. Now, we can go into science as to why that may be, but it doesn't change the fact. And until you've seen that and you've seen people come back from the brink of death because of an adjustment, then I think it is hard for people to understand. If you haven't seen it, go to an office where it happens so you can see it and you can become just as certain as I am. And you evolve from this place of thinking to a place of knowing. Like, it's not a question for me. I don't have to ask, well, is this thing real or is it not? Because I know it to be real. And I've seen it over and over and over again. And before I seen it, I saw it through other people because I went to other offices and I had mentors and things of that nature. This is real and the world needs it. And I just want to make sure that you have the ability to practice the way that you want to practice this vitalistic concept. And there is research that we can do and have that allows that to happen. So this whole evidence-based scientific stuff, it's choosing to look through things at one perspective, and it's really adopting the same principle that we see happening right now. If I disagree with the main narrative, then what I must be saying is fake news, and it's not, right? If I dissent from what you believe and what you want to tell me is real, then it's fake news and I need to be silenced. And the answer is no. Vitalism is real. The movement, vitalism movement within chiropractic, if you will, is real. And fundamentally, we're not going away. And I'm not an old head. I hadn't been in the profession for 60 years. So there are a lot of people like me who believe that. And not only who believe it, but are putting action to it underneath to ensure that the message that we have to present will prevail, pure and simple.
Yep. And there you go. You get chiropractic, freedom, research, data, science, all in a 45-minute podcast.
I do want to say one thing, too, on the data perspective, and our developers are probably going to kill me, but we were talking about this the other day, and we're just going to do it. In light of what's happened for the next 30 days, anybody who comes onto or needs our platform, they get it free for 30 days. No setup fees, no first month fee. You just get set up and you get to utilize it for free. And there is a big research project that we're currently working on. I can't really devise that information right now, but that will be coming very, 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 very soon. And we're looking for that to be as wide as we can go within the profession to address some of the things that we've already talked about now and ensure that there are no longer a situation that demands the state closes.
Yeah, outstanding, outstanding. And this is yet another reason why, and we'll put in on the blog post with this, the information for people to take you up on that opportunity. We'll put the link there in the blog post that will go along with the podcast. And this is, again, yet another reason why we are psyched and grateful to have your wonderful family and you're along with yourself, Dr. Drew, at Mile High, August 20th to 23rd. You know, if you have not gotten the 411 on Mile High 2020 yet, you need to check your vision and check milehigh2020.com and be at that in August. You may, you know, plan to rise up, because I'll tell you, by that time, people are going to be itching to be getting together on higher ground and to be uplifting their communities. and having a community to tie into with that. So we look forward to seeing you there, Dr. Drew, and your family. We look forward to seeing all of you there. And if you enjoy the Mile High Podcast, mate, which I know you do, make sure you hit subscribe and never miss any episodes of Mile High Tick, and certainly don't miss Mile High in August. Thank you so much again, Dr. Drew.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed myself, and I look forward to seeing you in person real soon.